Uncover from CBC Podcasts brings you award-winning investigations year-round. Infiltrate an international network of neo-Nazi extremists.
He ranted with racist language.
Discover the true story of the CIA's attempts at mind control.
Their objective was to wipe my memory.
Or dig into a crypto king's mysterious death and $250 million missing.
There are deep oddities in this case.
With episodes weekly, Uncover is your home for in-depth reporting and exceptional storytelling. Find Uncover wherever you get your podcasts. This is a CBC podcast.
I am running for president of the United States to lead our great American comeback. Look, we know our country's going in the wrong direction. We see it with our eyes and we feel it in our bones. I don't think it has to be this way. American decline is not inevitable. It is a choice. And we should choose a new direction, a path that will lead to American revitalization. And to voters who are participating in this primary process, my pledge to you is this. If you nominate me, you can set your clock to January 20th, 2025 at high noon, because on the west side of the U.S. Capitol, I will be taking the oath of office as the 47th president of the United States. No excuses. I will get the job done.
That's Florida Governor Ron DeSantis announcing his U.S. presidential bid. And it wasn't a flashy press conference with crowds of supporters. He opted for a live Twitter stream with Elon Musk, which spectacularly crashed. The rising star in the Republican Party has made headlines for his action on anti-abortion bills, book banning, and a high-profile feud with Disney. Many see him as a contender, a key one, to unseat former President Donald Trump as the front runner for the Republican ticket. For more, I'm joined by Lori Rosa. She's a reporter for The Washington Post covering the state of Florida, and she's in West Palm Beach. Lori, good morning.
Good morning, Susan. How are you?
Well, good, but I'm wondering about Ron DeSantis. That was a pretty spectacular failure to launch, as many are calling it, last night on Twitter Spaces. What happened?
We don't know the exact details of the technical failure that marred the governor's launch, but it really was awkward, is one charitable way to put it. If you tuned in, you tried to hear silence and then whispering, and then it ended and then it started again. He did ultimately get his message out, but even then it was, you know, just some, you know, a few men talking to each other, and we were there to listen in. Governor DeSantis did go on Fox later, a slightly more traditional kickoff. But yeah, the start was not, was what you might call inauspicious.
Yeah, and Trump's team were having a field day, really, spitting out emails and, you know, comments on this. What was the reaction from them?
As you said, basically mocking and making fun of the technical glitches that that sort of haunted that first hour of this long-awaited announcement, because, you know, the world has known that Ron DeSantis was going to run for president, but we've had to couch it because he's never said sure. He's been kind of, you know, toying with it when asked. When he was asked during a debate before he won re-election in November, you know, will you be in Florida for 4 years to serve out your term? He wouldn't answer that question. So it's been open knowledge, but it's finally official when he, you know, filed with the Federal Elections Commission yesterday. So Trump's people had a field day with the glitches, but it's early days yet.
And DeSantis, though, has been polling well behind Donald Trump recently among Republican voters. And those two have a real history. So how has this relationship changed recently?
It really is interesting, because when Ron DeSantis was in Congress, much of that time during when Donald Trump was president, he was a Trump supporter. And it was Donald Trump who's Donald Trump's endorsement that catapulted Ron DeSantis to as front runner for his first gubernatorial race in Florida. DeSantis acknowledged that. Trump makes a point of that every chance he gets, that he made Ron DeSantis. That's not necessarily true, but he certainly made it possible for him to win his first governorship. But in the 4 years since then, DeSantis has definitely become his own man. He's led Florida the way he sees Florida should be led. And he was reelected by a landslide in November without any support from Trump.
Yeah, and Trump loves to come up with those nicknames, doesn't he? Swamp creature, he's calling DeSantis now, or Ron DeSanctimonious. But, you know, talking about his platform and his history handling the pandemic, he was, you know, against shutdowns and vaccine mandates. How did that shape how he's going forward in this race?
Ron DeSantis' reaction to the pandemic pretty much changed his political outlook. If you watch him when he was first elected as governor, he was somewhat more centrist. Pandemic comes along, he goes along with restrictions at first, but then he decides to do it his own way. And by his telling, that worked out best for Florida. So he thinks, you know, he wants to make America Florida. Mm. And the pandemic restrictions and freedom from them is one of his big selling points.
And he's actually gone further with a tagline almost. You know, he's known for this slogan, Florida is where woke goes to die. What does he mean by that, Lori? And how is that going to fit into his political ideology that he's selling on the campaign trail?
Woke is undefined by mm-hmm. Governor DeSantis. He doesn't say exactly what it is, but he indicates when he talks about woke, he talks about indoctrination, he talks about leftists and liberals, he talks about Hollywood, he talks about content for children. Woke is a convenient catch-all phrase that he's turned into a pillar of his campaign, even though it is slightly undefined. But it generally, when he starts talking about that, it generally means African-American history, for example, or critical race theory or LGBT issues.
And these are things that he's going to be using to try to stir up more support.
Right. And it's worked. It's worked in Florida. As I say, he did win re-election by a landslide. He champions parental rights. And the bill that most people call the Don't Say Gay bill its real name is the Parental Rights and Education Bill. So it's all a matter of where you're looking at it from. From Governor DeSantis' viewpoint, he's protecting children. And lately he's been saying he's protecting women and children with some of these anti-LGBTQ laws. And others, if from a different perch, see it as infringing on individual rights.
Some people, though, are concerned that some Republicans that I've heard and read about are concerned that this brand of conservatism may not be able to sell to a wider audience outside Florida. Is that one of his challenges?
Oh, it absolutely is. If he does get past Donald Trump, which right now doesn't look likely, but as I said, it's very early days and Trump has a lot left to get through in courts and elsewhere. But if Ron DeSantis does make it to the general election and he's running against Joe Biden, that message, how it sells in Florida, may be very different from how it sells in states that DeSantis will need to win to become president, because the message is pretty narrowly focused on, as you mentioned, woke, and the rest of it, he'll need to prove to America that it isn't as divisive as it has been in Florida, and that it really is good for the country, not just good for his political ambitions.
And the other concern that we've heard somewhat in the last few months is that this idea of retail politics, that he's not at ease on the campaign trail, certainly no match for Trump, as we've seen recently in that CNN town hall. Is that what concerns some Republicans who support DeSantis even?
I think it does. I'm not sure if millions of American voters really care about whether they could have a beer with Ron DeSantis or not. He can point to a lot of policy victories that he pushed through in Florida. Florida's only one state. But I don't know if his likability or the retail stuff, I'm not sure how much that will matter in the end. Getting through the primaries, it will matter. So for GOP voters, it will matter. But I think for the general electorate, once he's going up against Joe Biden, it's not going to be a lot of, would you have a beer with this guy?
I mean, last week, the NAACP issued a travel advisory for Florida, saying the state is actively hostile to minorities. How does DeSantis respond to that kind of criticism?
Very dismissive. His team says that's just a stunt. Same with LGBT groups issuing travel advisories. They say it's a stunt. And Ron DeSantis addressed it last night during the Twitter space, once it finally got going, he said, you know, those folks will come down here and vacation in Florida and then they'll issue travel advisories. So they do not take it seriously, although the issue is very serious. You know, I've interviewed people, I've met people who are leaving Florida because of some of these policies.
Right. Lori, one final thing. Trump's team, of course, is mobilizing. I mean, Florida has become this focal point of this early day of the nomination race. What are you seeing about Trump's team mobilizing at the moment?
Well, they're very much online and pushing back against DeSantis anytime they can on Truth Social, where, you know, Trump sort of lives online. It's going to come down to, in many ways, the campaign war chest. And right now, Ron DeSantis has a lot of money. He's sitting on top of a huge pile of cash. Trump, of course, will be well-funded as well. But it's going to be a money race, I think, in the early days. And the first, you know, caucuses and votes don't even come until early 2024. So there's a lot of time for them to sort of duke it out online or in public. But right now it's a lot about getting the money to do that fight.
Wow. Well, we'll be watching with interest. Lori, thanks so much.
Well, thanks, Susan.
Lori Rosa is a reporter for The Washington Post covering the state of Florida, and we reached her this morning in West Palm Beach.
Hello, I'm Jess Milton. For 15 years, I produced The Vinyl Cafe with the late, great Stuart McLean. Every week, more than 2 million people tuned in to hear funny, fictional, feel-good stories about Dave and his family. We're excited to welcome you back to the warm and welcoming world of The Vinyl Cafe with our new podcast, Backstage at The Vinyl Cafe. Each week, we'll share two hilarious stories by Stuart, and for the first time ever, I'll tell you what it was like behind the scenes. Subscribe for free wherever you get your podcasts.
John Feary has been listening in. He is a Republican strategist and partner of EFB Advocacy, and he's in Florida, in West Palm Beach as well. John, good morning.
Good morning.
So, John, your take on the, quote, some are calling the failure to launch on Twitter and his decision to do that alongside Elon Musk?
Well, it certainly was a unique strategy, and I think that the DeSantis people are spinning it as they broke the internet and shows the enthusiasm for his candidacy, and that might be true. You know, typically when you want to make some sort of announcement that you're running for president, you want to have a lot of people behind you cheering, and so it was kind of odd for him just to be kind of in a room with Elon Musk, kind of very quiet. And so, you know, it was a unique start to a campaign, but it's really not how you start the campaign. It's how you finish the campaign. And, you know, there's a long road ahead, so I don't want to count Ron DeSantis out right now. And he does have access to lots of money, and that can keep him in the campaign for a while.
Yeah, huge bump to start, though, really quite spectacular. You know, I've watched him for quite a long time. He seemed quite a bit more golden last November when, you know, he won by a landslide in the midterm elections when Republicans generally underperformed. So what's happened since?
Well, I think what happened since was he had Trump running against him almost exclusively. You know, if you look at these ads in Florida and Washington, D.C., where I'm based, Trump has been running thousands and thousands of ads against Ron DeSantis, basically attacking him for supporting cuts to Social Security and then raising taxes. But also what happened to DeSantis, and I like Ron DeSantis, and you know I would prefer him over Trump, to be honest with you, is that he had a huge conservative majority in his Florida legislature, and that allowed him to kind of push a lot of things that were further to the right than he would have done otherwise. And you see that perfect example of that with the 6-week abortion ban, which, you know, might play in Florida, but I think abortion is still an issue that Republicans have to be careful with. And if they get exactly everything that the far right wants, it's going to alienate some people in the middle. So I do think that when you have a huge majority like that, you do things that you would not do otherwise, and that's kind of pushed him further to the right. And I also think that I understand what he was trying to do with Disney. You know, they got in a spat, and sometimes you want to punish your enemies. But Disney is an iconic brand, and you know, there's just a lot of Republicans who like Disney. They like Disneyland. They like Disney World. They go to it, or their families go to it. And so picking on Mickey Mouse is maybe not the greatest strategy of all time.
John, is age in this Republican race going to make a difference? Trump's 76, DeSantis is 44. Will that make a huge difference?
You know, it's a really interesting point. I think that having Donald Trump run these ads on Social Security shows you how the Republican base is older and wider than the populace at large. And you would think that the case for generational change would be a good case to make, especially if you're running against Joe Biden. And as you said, you know, Trump is no spring chicken either. But I think it works in the general election better than it works in the primary election. That's because Trump has this kind of visceral connection with a wide swath of Republican voters that, you know, seems to transcend age. And Trump also doesn't seem to be old and doddering. I mean, he's pretty vibrant, at least in his public communications. And that, I think, helps him. And, you know, he's also, for the older voters in the primary, they don't seem to be all that concerned about Trump's age, at least right now.
Hmm. Who of Trump's supporters will be hardest for Ron DeSantis to steal?
Well, like I said, I think it's going to be the older, whiter people in the primary who not only like Trump's position on Social Security, but also liked Trump's how he handled COVID. You know, I'm somebody who likes DeSantis' approach to COVID, but there are some folks in the Republican primary who thought that Trump did as good a job as he could. They supported his efforts on the vaccine, and they kind of credit him with the fact that they were able to survive COVID. Those are tend to be the older voters, and I think that's going to be very difficult for DeSantis to peel those voters away. And the other thing that's interesting is Trump has this, you know, persona of being a working class person, even though he's comes from a very wealthy family. And DeSantis has this kind of reputation of being an Ivy Leaguer, even though he came from a working class family. So, you know, a lot of those low information working class voters have this cosmic connection to Trump that seems to be very difficult for anyone to peel away from him as he runs for president.
Now, of course, Ron DeSantis is solidly in position two at this early stage. But still, there's a big gap developed between Trump and DeSantis. What about other candidates? Are there any others you see who are in the race or could enter still that might challenge Trump and DeSantis?
You know, the guy I look to, and I think if you're looking for the favorite inside the Beltway candidate, it's Senator Tim Scott.
South Carolina.
Senator from South Carolina, announced earlier this week that he was running for president. John Thune, who is the Senate Minority Whip, immediately endorsed him. He's well respected, well liked, and then he's also giving a very positive message. And he's not really going to get involved in the fights between DeSantis and Trump. So if DeSantis and Trump get in a huge food fight and tear each other down, I think someone like a Tim Scott can kind of come through and rise to the occasion. He also has access to a lot of money. He's already got $22 million in his account. He has the backing of Larry Ellison from Oracle, who has pledged to give him $30 million for a super PAC. So he's well funded. He's probably better. He's probably the third best funded in the campaign, and you could see him kind of lasting a long time.
Just briefly on that point, John, there was some talk a couple of months ago that big donors were starting to hedge their bets a bit on DeSantis. Is that accurate?
I think that's true. That happened especially after the 6-week abortion ban bill signed by DeSantis and some of this fighting with the Disney. Some folks are looking for an alternative, and many of them are looking at either Nikki Haley, who also has a lot of support amongst female Republicans. I talked to a lot of women across the country, and they really like Nikki Haley. She doesn't seem to have as much access to cash as Tim Scott does, though. And a lot of those big funders are looking elsewhere and potentially going to support either Haley or Tim Scott.
But still, those candidates like Nikki Haley, they're in still very small percentage support at this stage. John, I'm going to ask you to look into your political crystal ball. Who comes out ahead in 2024?
Well, you know, you have to start kind of doing a state by state. Who's going to win in Iowa, and who's going to win in New Hampshire? I think that Trump wins Iowa. It's a very conservative state, and then and that gives him some momentum. Can DeSantis or Scott do well in New Hampshire to kind of change that narrative? You go down then to South Carolina, and you know you have Haley and Tim Scott, and does it go home state, or does Trump, who has great numbers down there? You know, you'd have to say that that Trump's going to get the nomination if you were looking at the conventional wisdom and looking at all those facts and figures right now. But you know, it's going to be a long campaign, so I'm hesitant to say that the conventional wisdom is completely right. There could be a surprise in the Republican primary,
and anything can happen in politics, as we saw last night, didn't we?
Exactly. Okay. There could be a couple bumps in the road as we all go through this process.
Thank you very much, John.
Okay, thank you.
John Feary is a Republican strategist and partner of EFB Advocacy, a lobbying firm. We reached him this morning in Florida.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.